The NBA playoffs are here, and with FanDuel, your group chat's about to be going off. Because right now, new customers can bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets if you win. And with live bets, your heart emojis will really be racing from tip-off to the final buzzer. Plus, when you win, you'll get paid faster than your friends can send you a victory gift. Or is it GIF? Who cares? You won! So get the word out to your crew and download FanDuel today. New customers bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets if you win. Make every moment more with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Official partner of the NBA.
21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See full terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
I know what you're thinking. An episode about The Happening? What, plants trying to kill us? Well, yeah, plants are really dangerous, and they do defend themselves, and they can kill things. You're going to find out exactly what I'm talking about on this episode. And trust me, no one knows better than me, because I went and got a plant for my room, a cactus, and I started sleeping with it just like a stuffed animal. And every time I wake up, I'm bloody all over. What do you think that's from? Ghosts? Don't be ridiculous! It's the cactus. It hates me. Or it's jealous of me. But whatever it is, I'm gonna get to the bottom of it, because I've now become a PI, a plant investigator. What's that, Mr. Senator? You think a pine tree kidnapped your wife? Well, I know just the man with the right roots in the community who will branch out and crack this case wide open. Crack it like a nut, like a pine nut. And I'm talking about me, Ethan Edinburgh, PI, plant investigator. This Friday, every Friday on UPN.
Bad science. Did the movie get it right? Bad science. Or will we have to fight?
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Bad Science. I'm Ethan Edinburgh. This is the show that breaks down the science of a movie with a comedian and a scientist. And today, unfortunately for my guests, we're talking about The Happening. I force them to watch The Happening. And I really try not to crap on movies in this podcast, but it's really tough to avoid with this one in particular. But I am going to try and show the bright sides of it, too. So it came out in 2008. And I do also want to mention that in the middle of an interview, 5 years after that, Mark Wahlberg was quoted as saying, quote, "It was a bad movie that I did. I don't want to tell you what movie. All right, The Happening. Fuck it. It is what it is. Fucking trees, man. The plants. Fuck it. You can't blame me for wanting to try to play a science teacher. At least I wasn't playing a cop or a crook." I think that sums it up pretty good. Joining me today, a stand-up comedian, writer, and actor you may know from Paddleton and The Feels, it's Ever Maynard.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here, Ever. How are you?
Good, good. How are you?
I'm doing great, living my best life up here in this isolated quarantine.
I hope it's like the little house in The Happening.
Yeah, it is. I actually modeled my apartment after that house because I'm such a fan of this movie. It's got this old pipe, so I can talk to my neighbors through a pipe.
She just happened to have that?
Not only did she happen to have it, she mentioned it early.
At dinner.
Hey, listen, I hope you're enjoying your food. I have a room with a pipe in it where you can hear an outhouse that I have. So, I don't know, in case you're bored.
In case you want to check it out. That's it.
There's also, I was looking some stuff up about you, which is not weird at all because you were going to be a guest on my show. So it's research. Yeah, it's part of my research that I'm doing. You have a personal quote on IMDb that I loved, which is just straight up, money ain't cheap.
Yeah. Did you, damn, you really did.
Were you aware of that?
No.
It's really good. And I don't know, it made me think about like, how does this stuff work? Like, do you get a call from IMDb and they're like, what quote encompasses your attitude?
Man, yeah. Damn, yeah, money ain't cheap. That's for sure.
Money ain't cheap.
Yeah. I used to have stickers that said, money ain't cheap. Maybe I should bring those back.
Oh, yeah.
It's something that my dad told me. And then I just started using it all the time.
Man, your dad is also a funny dude. And yeah, shirts. Well, I would wear a shirt that says, money ain't cheap. That's great.
Okay, right. Well, new merch coming soon.
Okay. Well, joining us today in what I assume will be a very confusing name recognition for everybody on the program today is a PhD candidate at the University of California, Berkeley, Evan Groover.
Hey, what's up, y'all?
What is up, Evan? I've been confused for you my whole life. And just to like make it weirder and more confusing, we also have Ever on the program. So it's Ethan, Evan, and Ever today.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think we can figure it out.
Yeah, I want us to kind of use our names more than we normally would. Is that okay? Can we do that?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Whatever you like. Yeah.
Evan, not to take too much time away from Ever, again, I am Ethan, but Evan, you are a scientist and you have something to do with CRISPR. Is that correct? I have a few notes about you I want to get into, but can you tell people what your involvement is with it and what CRISPR is?
Yes. So I am a plant synthetic biologist. So that means that I develop tools and kind of use those tools to modify plants to make them more interesting and useful for us humans. And so I work specifically developing a tool called CRISPR-Cas9, which is a technology that was an adapted bacterial immune system that was discovered about 10 years ago here at the University of California, Berkeley. And CRISPR is kind of a very useful tool if you want to modify the genomes of living organisms. And so we think that it can be a really useful tool for improving plants. And specifically what I'm trying to use it for is to make plants more efficient at taking carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere. So kind of taking plants' innate ability to perform photosynthesis and take CO2 out of the air and kind of bumping it up by modifying their genomes with CRISPR-Cas.
How dare you, sir? Yeah. Modifying plants? I am an environmentalist. Stop messing with our plants.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you that I think it is in the interest of all environmentalists to kind of get on the same side as GMOs. I think we have immense potential to use this technology for good and for sustainability and to really empower farmers and consumers alike. So I'm really excited to tell people about how we can do that and how we can kind of really just move a lot of the, remove kind of like the inefficiencies and kind of weird, murky, bad parts of our agricultural systems by having smarter, more sophisticated plants.
Wow. Okay. I've completely flipped. I'm 180 on your side now. So you're also helping just like the environment overall, right? I mean, by taking out CO2 or converting it to more oxygen, I'd imagine you're like saving the atmosphere, which could potentially save billions of lives. Is that correct? You're like a superhero?
That is in fact the goal, Ethan. Yeah, I think, you know, I'm just a PhD candidate. So, you know, superhero status, I think, can only be conferred, you know, once I've actually gotten the degree. But, you know, I'm on the route towards superhero now. Mm. Wow.
Superhero to be.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. It's it comes with your diploma.
They give you a cape?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. the rope pulls off. It's the cape is underneath and the spandex. Yeah.
That's awesome. So just before we get into this, man, I really, it's so hard for me not to insult the movie, just like even in a jokey way, but I'm just going to say movie. I'm not going to use a crap adjective, even though I guess I just did. So yeah. Okay. Yeah, technically I did just put down the movie a little bit, but before we get into my little issues with it, I guess there is a theory that the movie is actually like a joke, that the movie is like actually kind of good and aware of itself. Do you know what I'm talking about?
It reminds me of like The Room. Like, yeah. The Room was not aware. It's almost like they're like, we're going to make The Room, but about plants. And it'll be, it's just like they're everyone. I don't think everyone's in on the joke because clearly Mark Wahlberg was not in on the joke.
Yeah, I don't know. First of all, I don't know if there is a joke to be in on. I want to be clear about that.
Do you think the theory is a troll? Like this movie trolled all of us?
I don't want to come down strong on one side or another. I like to be agnostic about a lot of things, but I feel like there is a chance that he was, M. Night, of course, my buddy, M. Night, was trying to make almost like a parody of his other movies, like almost like a horror, like scary movie kind of did, but in a very subtle way.
Yeah, I would buy into that having seen this movie. It's pretty corny.
I do not buy into that. I don't buy into that at all. I think that this was a very genuine attempt at a horror movie and just kind of like a soapbox movie where it's just like, here's the morality of blah, 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 like pollution. And this is what we're doing to the earth, like really making a point where it was like too much. And then when people are like, hey man, this is actually really bad. He was like, yeah, yeah. Well, actually we, you know, this is, I'm in on that. This was done on purpose.
Right.
I think it was one
I
of
see
those
what you're things. Saying. It's like a cover-up situation almost. Cover-up.
I think this movie was, I mean, the casting is brilliant. The chemistry between those two, spot on. I couldn't I was in it, hook, line, and sinker. I was like, Mark, Zoe, yes. Also, who's Joey? What happened to Joey?
I don't know. They had tiramisu, and then that was it, I guess.
Okay, can you tell me, is there something in, what's in tiramisu?
Oh, man, I want to say nutmeg, but I don't even think that's right. My first guess might be wrong.
Flour?
Is, yeah, gotta
thing
be.
Where they could drive Joey crazy. And also, they just disregarded it. Okay, I'm starting to break down the movie. This is getting away from the point. But
no, love it.
Joey really bothered me that he would call so much. And then all they did was have dessert. And then Mark was like, you lied to me? And then was like, okay, like, what? And then John Leguizamo makes this good point about how Zoe was crying right before their wedding and how she's a bad wife. So this whole time, you're just sitting there watching Zoe and you're just like, she's such a bad fucking wife. Like, the audience, the one woman.
That's her main characteristic, is bad wife.
Yeah. Hey, before you really get to know this character, there's something you need to know. She's a bad wife.
Yeah, you're going to be one of the main characters in this movie. I don't have a name for her yet, but she's a crappy wife. She's like a normal wife, but we're not going to like her.
Like, they sent Zoe the project and the sides, and it was like the character description was like, bad wife had tiramisu with a man named Joey.
Yeah, that's not cheating, by the way. For anybody listening that felt bad watching this movie, having tiramisu with someone of a different gender is actually fine. And you can just come clean and say that and it's not a big deal.
Yeah. And then Mark, I don't know if y'all caught this, tried to play the game back to make her jealous.
He chatted up that gal at the pharmacy, you know? It's a pretty egregious offense.
Thank you. I mean, the chemistry. Who's chasing who, you know?
Yeah, man, it's like, I don't even know where to start, honestly. There's so much. But were you guys, that is a good question, like, were you guys rooting for them to, like, get together and make up? Because that was something I had trouble with also watching the movie, where I was like, I don't know if the point of this is for, like, Mark Wahlberg to kind of realize that he deserves someone better and move on? Yeah. Or do they, I don't know, like, support each other through this tragic event and now have a beautiful, happy life together? I don't know.
Have y'all read the book Attached, about attachment theories?
Oh, I thought you meant there was a book that came out with this movie called The Happening. Did you read the Attached book? No, I haven't read that.
It's about, like, it's like a theory, like, you can have, like, a stable attachment where you're like, okay, I'm my own person. You can have, like, you can be codependent, or you can be an avoidant, where one partner can be really in it, and then when it gets too close, they pull away. And a lot of times, those partners go with someone who's more codependent or destable. So it's that whole, like, cycle of a relationship where it's like, I love you, I need you, I'm pulling away. And the other person is like, why are you pulling away from me? I'm Mark Wahlberg, I'm chasing you. And then Zoe's like, what am I doing? You know, like, I have to raise this little girl. Can we please talk about the trauma of this little girl?
Oh man, she is, yeah, screwed.
Pretty calm, all things considered, you know, having very clearly lost both of her parents over the course of this movie. I mean, it really, so much of the emotional arc just didn't make any sense to me. It was really,
oh my gosh, she was so chill. You're right, crazy chill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But also, I never thought that Zoe and Mark, I never believed that they were together. So it's like, who's chasing who? Is Mark trying to get her to fall in love with him? Is she trying to fall in love with Mark? Was their relationship just dissipating? It wasn't until the pipe scene where she meets him midway that I felt, wow, yes.
Yeah.
She's waking up.
I wrote a note about that. I mean, you know, we're going all over the movie here, but, you know, whatever.
COVID. Whatever.
Come on, guys. It's The Happening. Let's get real. That part really, really bothered me. That was, like, probably top 2, top 3 ridiculous moments for me about the movie. I want to know how you guys felt about it, but they know that going outside, at least they're accepting, whether they're right or wrong, that going outside will kill them. And they don't even try. They're there for like 15 minutes, it seems like, in their respective structures. And then he, who's supposedly some sort of scientist, he's a science teacher at least, decides, I'm going to go outside. I'm not going to protect my mouth, my nose. I'm not going to try and bring supplies to you. We're both just going to go outside and essentially kill ourselves and this girl. This little child.
You know, the most confusing part of this whole movie is that it's made very clear. I mean, they see on the news that it's this airborne chemical, and no one takes, you know, no one so much as pulls their shirt over their face the whole movie. You know,
yeah.
No one plugs their nose. They just run away from the wind. I mean, that's got to be the most, you know, dramatically, you know, incomprehensive method of avoiding a toxin possible. So I was really, really just so confused by that scene also. It was like they were fine in the house. Absolutely. Just really, really frustrating. Yeah.
I have two things. One, those who can't do teach. So clearly Mark Wahlberg could not be a scientist. So he has to teach science. And two, I will say the two old lesbians that were knitting with a face mask, I was like, yes, you go, old lesbians. Like, of course we figured it out. Of course. Not to toot my own dyke horn, but it was a pretty proud moment to see LGBTQ people represented as like being smart enough to knit and wear a gas mask. Sorry.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and are you talking about the girls in the beginning?
No, I'm talking about, like, this is like midway through the movie. It's a brief cutout. It's like right when there's like news going on and there's so much time. It's like it's happening between 9 a.m. and 3 p.m. There's going to be wind. And then it's like cutting through, like people watching the news. There are two old women who are wearing gas masks. The only people in the entire movie wearing gas masks. Two old women. Where are they getting these gas masks? Knitting. Who's got a gas mask laying around? That's kink. I think these two old women are kink.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I remember that moment very vividly because that's exactly what I thought when I was watching. It was like, oh yeah, gas masks. Everyone should be, where are the gas masks in this movie? The army guy doesn't have one?
No.
Yeah, he pulls up in the Humvee and then he gets out. And it's like, there's got to be some gear in there. You know, there's got to be some means of protecting himself. It was really, just really fully confusing.
See, but this is also, again, I think there is some merit to this comedy movie thing. Because the army guy was like a total schmuck. And them at the end going out into the outside, you know, just like breathing in air, not covering themselves. The chase scene, I think that you mentioned, Evan, where they're like literally running from wind is like, I don't know. There's just a lot of nods to, I know this is ridiculous type filmmaking.
Yeah. Yeah. I think part of what really hit me was just how, like, we were immediately establishing, they immediately established that Mark Wahlberg is just like the most inadequate science teacher possible. And we see it throughout the movie, but like in not even like the first scene, he's telling his student, who's a 15-year-old boy, that he has a perfect face. I think like every month thereafter, I was just like, oh my gosh, man, this dude.
And
I love that in that same sequence, he's also agreeing with him that like there really are no facts. He was kind of saying like, yeah, you know what? Science will just come up with some reason for it, but that's just the theory. And we actually don't know anything. And that's a good call.
Yeah, I anticipate we'll touch on this like kind of, you know, at multiple points during the pod. But like the central kind of evolutionary idea in this film is that like evolution is so mysterious, we're never going to understand. And, you know, they have everything from like a science teacher to a horticulturist to a, you know, a full-on professor saying this. And it's so ridiculous. It's like, what kind of scientist, you know, is content to say, oh, we'll never know, you know, the bees are just disappearing and it's going to be a mystery forever. You know, it's really a kind of grinded my gear watching it as an experimentalist.
Yeah.
Just to keep saying our names as much as possible. Ethan, Evan, did you guys like at one point in the movie think this is a huge 5G conspiracy movie?
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
I was like, yes. How timely right now. And they kept making points. Like, it's in the wind. It's in the air. And then there's like the groups of five. You can't have more than groups of five. And then they went to the house where there was no electricity and no internet. I mean,
yeah. Hello. Wake up, people.
Wake up, sheeple.
Wake up, sheeple. Thank you, Ever. Go off.
I didn't know I don't know if you guys picked it up, but I was like, yeah, this is what's happening. I believe that the happening was actually a big, I mean, waving red flag to say, hey, what are we doing to the earth? Also, could that happen with plants, though? Could they really just turn on us like that?
Yeah, I mean, that is the big question here with the movie. Ever, thank you for asking it. Evan, please answer it.
So a cool thing about plants is that they are really actively communicating with things around them all the time. So plants actually, some like 20% of the CO2 that plants are fixing from the air, they're actually re-releasing as chemical volatile signals that are going to other plants, their friends and their competitors. They're going to us humans, they're going to pollinators, they're going to microbes, and they're really negotiating these very complex ecological interactions that plants are having. And so, of course, some of those signals are toxins. I think, you know, it's not unreasonable to suggest that a plant, you know, in some future, very, very down the line, maybe millions of years down the line, could evolve to have a neurotoxin that it could release as a volatile. But this idea that suddenly all the plants within a generation just decide to become totally radicalized and kill all the humans and have this coordinated effort where they're talking to each other, I think is extreme fiction. So, I mean, there's kind of a little grain of truth in the whole thing, you know, that plants, they kind of have to live in the same place their entire life. And because of that, they have really, really robust systems of chemical communication with one another. Anything beyond that, I think, is going to be a little bit speculative. And certainly that plants are going to release a neurotoxin that makes people kill themselves, that's definitely fantasy.
Okay, I do have a question about plants communicating, because I had heard it's okay to talk to plants, like, that they actually respond to it. I do believe that, but part of me doesn't. And then, okay, so I rescued a plant. The brand of the plant is Lisa. It's like Lisa brand. I don't know whoever's whatever farm has a name, their farm, Lisa. And it's like a big sort of like house palm, but I found it next to a dumpster. And Lisa's come back to life in the living room, but my roommate and I have this running joke where we blame everything on Lisa. So like if the neighbors are loud, we're just like, Lisa, shut up. Is that like affecting my plant Lisa in a negative way?
Yeah, so definitely my favorite quote in this movie is that, you know, this horticulturist is in his greenhouse and he's speaking to the plants and he's like, oh, it's going to be okay, babies, we'll be back, whatever.
This, you know, is very the hot sweet. Hot dog man, right?
Which one?
Hot dog man.
Of course, the hot dog man, yes. Yeah. And he says, the line is like, you know, they've been able to prove that plants respond to human touch. They've done studies. And I think, you know, it's my general opinion, considering the evidence out there, that plants aren't really so susceptible to human speech. Plants can detect noises. They have kind of mechanoreceptors that can sense vibrations in the air and in the soil. But nobody's been ever able to like definitively show that that's, you know, specifically to be perceiving any noises that are coming from humans or other animals. So that's pretty fictitious, I would say.
Well, but the movie makes a point to talk about energy. You know, he has this mood ring and he's telling the daughter, super chill. We have chill daughter. We have hot dog man. We have bad wife. I'm talking about chill daughter, about how her energy affects the mood ring and we all give off a certain energy. So hasn't there been some studies done? Like, I remember there was like the famous one with water and that it turns to ice and they open the freezer and they yell at it. And then they open another freezer and they say, I love you. You're beautiful. And it like makes different shapes. So it is to me the plant hot dog man theory was kind of coming from that.
Yeah. I mean, I can't speak to those specific studies, but it sounds a little spurious to me. And you know, certainly I was confused this entire movie as to why a grown man was wearing a mood ring and having to incorporate it kind of metaphysically into every single thing that happened to him.
Listen, at the end, his bad wife, that was the one thing, that was the one good thing that they had in their relationship, was this memory of the mood ring, and he was just onto it. That's the significance of this ring. Mark, get a divorce.
So, but like, yeah, he gave it to her, but then he was wearing it, and it was like, did she not want the mood ring? Like, I didn't understand what was going on.
I mean, that makes sense that she doesn't want it, and he shouldn't want it either. It's weird. I don't want to judge people for wearing mood rings, but at least in this movie, it was in a lot of shots, and it was distracting, and I don't know. I don't think it paid off for me, but I'm not trying to attack the movie, and I love everyone in it, and I love everyone who worked on it, and I thought, it's always great to see John Leguizamo. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, we love the movie. Nobody's attacking the movie. You
know? I'm attacking the movie. I'm going on record. I'm attacking the movie.
All right.
I'm attacking this movie.
All right, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Hey everyone, this is Jesse David Fox, host of Good One, a podcast about jokes. I am proud to announce that I have personally won the Streaming Wars. And there's a new docu-special on Peacock based on our own Vulture podcast. Good One, a show about jokes, follows Mike Birbiglia as he develops new material, taking audiences through the process of transforming personal stories into stand-up. Featuring interviews with Mike's family and comedy colleagues like Seth Meyers, Hasan Minhaj, and Asko Akatsuka, Good One, a show about jokes, is streaming now only on Peacock.
The break is over. Here we go to the show about science.
So, okay, this stuff is like insanely interesting to me as far as the plants that they're able to send out some sort of communication. There was one mentioned in the movie, tobacco plants. He says, and again, this is not a scientist I'm quoting, this is Hot Dog Man. So he talks about tobacco plants, and I think that they tell wasps to kill caterpillars.
Yes. So this is a really cool thing.
Is that right?
Yeah, it totally checks out. And actually, the story, since this movie was made, actually, the story has become a little bit more complicated in a super, super interesting way. So here's the story. So a tobacco plant is in a field, and it's getting preyed upon by a caterpillar. And the tobacco plant, in light of this herbivory, decides that it's going to release a chemical signal into the air. And what's interesting about this chemical signal is that if you just, you know, get anything to generically crunch on a leaf, it's not going to produce the same signal. There's actually something specifically in the saliva of that caterpillar that potentiates this chemical signal. And so the signal goes into the air, and it actually recruits these parasitoid wasps. And I kind of am glad that M. Night Shyamalan did not learn about this parasitism, because I think this would be a super, super gnarly movie, even gnarlier than it is right now if he figured this out. But what these wasps do is they can specifically be recruited to the leaves, and they lay their eggs inside the caterpillars.
What?
And those eggs, the larvae, essentially over the next few weeks, begin to grow and eat that caterpillar from the inside out. And finally, after a few weeks, they bust out and kill the caterpillar. And so essentially, it's just like the most metal thing possible. It is super, super spooky. And, you know, since this movie has come out, people have now actually been able to show that not only is a wasp involved and a caterpillar involved, but also a virus is involved. And so these wasps actually bring with them, with their eggs, a virus that goes inside the caterpillar and weakens the caterpillar's immune system.
Oh my God.
These wasps and viruses have this mutualistic relationship where they're helping one another kind of live out their life cycle. It's just absolutely insane. So there is a little bit of truth to kind of, you know, these volatile signals really helping plants depend themselves.
Wait a second. Take me back. The caterpillar is crunching, you said, on the leaves, and that gives off, like, the plant gives off some sort of signal that it's like under attack?
Yeah, exactly. So there's something in the saliva of that caterpillar that changes the chemicals inside of the leaf, that kind of turns them into these volatile chemicals that will go into the air and recruit the wasps. So,
and that was like developed over time, like the plant's chemistry wasn't always like that. Like after, I don't know, however long of being attacked, then it like developed this weird thing that combines with their saliva, or was that like always there?
Yeah, so it has definitely evolved. And what's interesting about this this whole kind of system with the virus and the wasp and the caterpillar is that if you kind of do a back of the envelope calculation to estimate about how long, you know, a system like that would take to evolve, we're talking on the order of millions to tens of millions of years. And so I think just on its face, the idea that plants will suddenly overnight, you know, kind of have this ability to specifically target humans, I think is a little bit silly in light of other examples from the plant kingdom.
Wow. So because they do say, I think, a couple times that plants must rapidly evolve in order to survive. I think that's also the Hot Dog Man speaking there. But you're saying that if you had to predict it, these plants were being attacked by caterpillars for millions of years, and then, you know, something slowly evolved where now they can, you know, get help.
Yes. Yeah. So what we do know is that symbiosis between the wasp and its virus has existed for something like 70 million years. And they've essentially been evolving alongside each other. And now they're almost entirely dependent on each other for their respective life cycles. And so we can expect that, you know, this kind of predation and the recruitment of wasps to protect tobacco plants has existed for also, you know, an incredibly long time. And so I think also, you know, we can kind of infer that the rate of evolution for these sorts of things is pretty slow. So I think the concept of rapid evolution, you know, spontaneously introducing something into, you know, populations of distantly related plants, I think is a little far-fetched.
So you're thinking that in this movie, it was the government.
It was definitely the government. Okay. Oh, yeah.
So you're saying it was the government. Okay, just... Also, my mind is a little blown right now thinking about this virus and the wasp and the tobacco evolution. And yeah. I'm wondering if M. Night was kind of trying to make a point of maybe when the girl was swinging on the tree swing. Can we talk about this? The people are releasing a neurotoxin because they're pissed off. So Zoe, the bad wife, now a bad mother, is putting this new child of hers on a tree swing. Mm-hmm. And Mark is like, or she's like, what kind of tree is this? And he, what did he say? Maple?
It's a maple tree. Yep. Yeah.
Do maple trees have any type of, you know, can they release?
Yeah, toxin defense.
Or how would they talk?
Yeah, so almost all plants are releasing some type of volatile compound into the environment. And, you know, you can smell these. I mean, if you smell the smell of freshly cut grass, that's the smell of grass saying, oh no, like I've been chopped up, you know, and it's warning it and telling them to kind of, you know, activate their immune systems, be prepared for some offense. And so I think it's reasonable to suggest that, you know, a big maple tree like that would be able to have the repertoire to be putting some volatiles into the air. But to suggest that it could spontaneously, you know, alongside all these little weeds that have been alive for probably a couple of months, you know, this big tree has been alive for probably decades, you know, that they could both just, in, you know, immediately develop this ability to be releasing chemicals is the same toxin is a little far-fetched.
Well, is it far-fetched that this would only stay in a certain region? Or if this really happened, would it just be widespread?
This wouldn't happen. But I mean, okay, yeah, but it's hard to, you know, glean any real life, you know, wisdom from this example, because it's just so crazy.
What do you think that it happened in Paris? I mean, it's such a beautiful city.
Yeah. And yeah, and in that gorgeous garden, it was like, you know, all these well kept after plants, you know, people are looking out for them, you know, they don't have a problem with humans.
Like New Jersey, I get. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what's crazy is like, you know, we see this, you know, this whole kind of event starts in Central Park and we're looking at like oak trees and, you know, elm trees and cherry trees. And then we're out in the middle of Pennsylvania. It's totally different flora, but, you know, they still have this like coordinated response. It's just like it's fun to imagine like all these plants, you know, states apart from one another conspiring, you know, be like, on this day, we're going to let it all out. You know, let's really get them, you know.
I mean, I should point out that there is part of that, like, this movie is a comedy that's aware of itself. Theory is that it's also about mass hysteria and like American paranoia. Although I guess at the end it's France too. So I don't know, world paranoia, human paranoia might be more accurate.
Do you think? I feel like there's like a Reddit. I should have looked this up, but I bet there's like a Reddit conspiracy theory of the happening where they're just pointing out all of the truths that have like come true or come to fruition of everything that's happening now, what the happening is called out. I would like to say that they even pointed out the militia. It was almost like a warning to have like a group of friends with a lot of guns, but no face mask. Am I crazy here to think that maybe M. Night was like, those who have ears, hear me. Or what is that Bible verse? Like, those who can see. Maybe M. Night was like, they'll get it. They'll hear. Not that I'm saying M. Night is the Messiah, but maybe that's what M. Messiah. Oh, wow. You know what? I think I might troll Reddit later today.
Yep. I like where this is going.
Yeah.
Really just pop off on some conspiracy. Look, it's COVID. I got a lot of time on my hands right now. I'm going to pop off on how Messiah Night Shyamalan has predicted COVID-19 and has told us all in advance about 5G via neurotoxins in plants.
I mean,
and how this will become a worldwide epidemic.
If there was a 6-episode Netflix documentary series called Messiah Night Shyamalan, like, I'm going to watch that.
Yeah,
I feel, well, I don't know how political this gets, but it definitely feels like this is something that perhaps our current administration would repeat word for word in a press conference.
Oh, yeah. Right. I mean, I do think those points about, you know, paranoia and hysteria were accurate. Like in when it did show, you know, like you just mentioned, those militia guys, you know, without gas masks and just a bunch of guns, just loading up guns.
Because I know a few people in a militia and they have gas masks.
Of course.
Yeah.
That's the first thing you get.
God, I'm from Texas.
Yeah. I'm from Florida. So okay. It's
we get it.
People love guns. And anyway, there were parts of the movie that I did feel like, yeah, oh, this is like making a comment on the way that we live and the way that we intake information. And, you know, although they did have scientists on the television that were like, they seem like kind of radical and I guess they seem like wrong. Because if you're making the point that this is all just hysteria, then why are the scientists convinced that it's plants? You know what I mean?
Yeah. So I wonder if you walked away from this movie feeling like more, you know, convinced that you should be involved in environmentalism, or did you, you know, maybe did it encourage you to think at all about, you know, the preservation of ecosystems or, you know?
I mean, I will say I was watching it, taking notes and like thinking about science shit. So that did occur to me, but I don't remember thinking about it the first time I saw it. However, you know, 10 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because it's, you know, there's this interesting kind of recurring thread through the movie where, you know, we're introduced at the beginning to, you know, the bees are going extinct and they're just disappearing. And then we're introduced to these red tides, you know, these big algal blooms that are, you know, which actually do release neurotoxins into the air. And then, you know, now this freak plant accident. And, you know, I think the overarching narrative, I think we're led to believe that, like, this is because of climate change and this is because of human intervention, you know, in all these ecosystems. But like, it's just so unconvincing, I thought. It's just like the old one. Mark, at one point, he's like, I think I'm beginning to see a pattern here. And it's like, what, man, what's the pattern? Like, all of these are totally dissimilar examples. Like, you've even gone so far as to say that, like, they're totally unexplainable. You know, like, what do they have in common with one another if you don't understand what's happening? So I think, you know, I appreciate the attempt, you know, 2008, you know, M. Night was trying to put us on, but I really don't think that they really sent that one home.
I did walk away like going, yeah, like we've really fucked it up. We fucked up some bad shit.
I was going to mention the bees thing. I was just going to comment on how I think they said specifically it was like an Einstein quote that if the bees disappeared off the face of the earth, man would only have 4 years left to live. So I looked it up and it is attributed to Einstein, but there's also no evidence that he said that. Somebody said that it is the kind of thing he would say. So it's like, we might as well attribute it to him. But do you, Evan, believe that to be true? And if so, what's our current status with the bees? Are we screwed with the bees?
No specific insight on the quote, even. I will say that with the bees, man, you know, it is a pretty dire situation. I think the bee thing is kind of a pretty unexplainable phenomenon. There are, you know, a lot of good hypotheses as to how that's happening. And, people are working hard on seeing that they're preserved, but there are fundamental ecological transitions that are occurring right now that are kind of making it harder to be a bee, especially a wild bee. And so you can pay a lot of credence also to the idea of these red tides, at least here in the United States. There are these harmful algal blooms, you know, that happen typically in estuaries and, you know, in oceanic environments. These are increasing in prevalence, and a lot of that can be attributed to transitions in ecology and also increasing water temperatures. And so, you know, there is some truth to the ideas that are introduced in this movie.
So these red tides are kind of the happening.
They are a little bit the happening. Yeah, they actually pose a really significant threat sometimes to humans and animals, because they some of these they're typically like dinoflagellates and you know, kind of single cellular algae that bloom up in water bodies, and they actually can produce neurotoxins. And sometimes those neurotoxins will be able to become airborne and aerosolized and, you know, kind of be able to,
I mean,
to hurt people.
Dude, come on then. This is totally making the happening valid and legit, because it's just as crazy of an idea. If I came to you and you didn't know anything about red tides and I told you that there's like water that weirdly turns red and releases neurotoxins into the air that can kill organisms, that's the same. That's the happening.
Yeah, I mean, there are certainly some similarities, but, you know, red tides have been around for quite a while. You know, that's old news. I think, you know, plants spontaneously developing that ability is a little bit more unsubstantiated by any examples in nature.
I just think he could have totally been inspired by it.
Oh yeah, yeah, inspiration for sure.
Are the red tides the same thing that's causing, like, off the coast of, I think, Long Beach and maybe throughout California right now, there's like a blue tide, an electrical tide. Have you guys seen this on Instagram?
No.
Everyone's going
down
to Long Beach. And there's an algae in the water that, like, at night it glows like a fluorescent, like neon blue.
Yeah.
Oh, I did see something about that. What is that?
Yeah, what is that? Not bad.
So yeah, frequently those aren't necessarily like bad or, you know, neurotoxin producing microorganisms. Those are just bioluminescent organisms that sometimes have blooms off the coast. Super exciting type of organism. I think I've been really stunned by these videos, as a lot of people have. But yeah, typically, you know, harmful algal blooms are not really so exciting to look at, and something that you want to run away from because there is going to be a toxin in the air.
Would you know it? Like, you, like an al? You said algo bloom.
An algal bloom, yeah.
Could it ever evolve to be camouflaged, like just like a regular bloom? So you're like, well, mm-hmm. this water's fine. And then you get near it and then bingo, bango.
Emily, our producer, is saying that it has a bad smell. Can you comment on that?
Oh, yeah. I think
on that, Evan.
Yeah, Evan.
Yeah.
The fuck is that?
It's, you know, so the specific species that are responsible for these blooms can vary. So I think, you know, generically, I think it would be very reasonable that, you know, there would be a bad smell. I think what you might notice first is that there's kind of an abrasive quality to the air in your lungs. But yeah, generally, you know, the organisms that are responsible are pretty different from one another. I looked into this a little bit in preparation for this. And so I think there's not such a generic thing that you might expect from any one bloom.
So I do have a question. One time I went to the beach and there was like a lot of like seaweed in it, in the ocean. It was due because of it was off of the Gulf of Mexico. And the receptionist was like, oh, the water is fine. The coral reef is dying. So it's all coming up and that's just seaweed. But it smelled like sulfur. It smelled really bad.
Mm.
Should I not have swam in that? Because I did.
How do you feel now? Are you okay?
I mean, I feel fine. I feel okay. I definitely feel like I cracked the code of the happening. Like, I, you know, if anything, my mind is clearer because I swam in this.
Yeah. That's really when you came up with your best stuff. You know, I don't want to put that into your head or whatever, but like, yeah. That, I think that's true.
But yeah. Also, is there a coral reef off of the Gulf of Mexico?
I don't specifically know that. I wouldn't be surprised if there were.
You don't know about the reefs? God!
Dude!
Come on! Some
Evan!
You're supposed to know about these things.
I haven't reached that level yet, but yeah.
Speaking about things that we should all know, I had a question for both of you, Ever and Evan, who maybe you guys should just have your own podcast because that sounds cool.
Yes.
Why were people walking backwards when they got infected?
Super, super strange. Kind of a mystery to me. I don't know if either of y'all are hip to this idea of toxoplasmosis. Have you heard of this?
No. Evan. Well,
so there is,
that sounds cool.
There is a parasite. It might even be in many of our brains. And it is associated.
Okay, stop there. That's terrifying.
Yes, right? Can you believe that?
This is in our brains already.
Yes.
Awesome.
And so here's what happened. So let's talk about mice, because toxoplasma is in the brains of a lot of animals, but when it's in the brains of mice, it's especially interesting. So when it gets into the brain of a mouse, it starts causing some damage and it flips this switch where the mouse becomes, instead of being repelled by the odor of a cat, becomes attracted to the smell of a cat. And as a result, these mice start acting super weird. They start walking backwards. You can watch a video. They like behave super strangely and they'll actually move towards a cat. They'll get eaten. And then this toxoplasma completes its reproductive life cycle in the body of the cat. The cat.
Oh my God.
It goes into the water. It goes into the soil. Another mouse picks it up and it completes its cycle. And so there is this idea that there are, you know, these biological agents that can really drive animals to kind of extreme circumstances. You know, we saw in the movie,
Jesus,
this zookeeper that's basically just feeding himself to lions. And I thought that was.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about.
Nature. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. I have been thinking about that, because can our arms just be ripped off like that?
And we don't feel anything. Also, we're just kind of like, oh, OK, let's do this one now.
Yeah. Is that how our bodies, Evan?
Yeah.
And Evan, what's that called again? I want to write that toxic. What's the thing in the mice's and our brains?
Toxoplasma. Gondii.
Toxoplasma. That sounds so fake.
Yeah, isn't it crazy? And Gondii. Gondii.
Have we and are we already using this to implement in chemical warfare?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. You know, you'd have to ask the government, you know.
I think that's I can answer that for you, Evan. That's a for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
That's a 10-4.
we're toxoplasma truthers here. We're really trying to get to the bottom.
Toxoplasma truthers. That's great. Okay, so yeah, I was totally asking the people walk backwards thing as a joke and had no idea that there's like such legitimate science. And I'm really gaining so much respect for Messiah Night during this podcast, because I thought, honestly, I really thought all these ideas were just based in like, oh, I don't fucking know. I got to make another scary movie. So this is what I'm coming up with. But these are all completely legitimate situations, it seems like. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. I think that, you know, there's necessarily some cool biological inspiration for some of the things that we see here. And, you know, it's fun to think about. I love thinking about how plants, you know, are communicating with one another and you know, maybe are collaborating on something and trying to get rid of environmental pests. But you know, at the scale that we're seeing in this movie, it's maybe not so realistic.
Man, yeah, so wild. And that part with the lion, the weirdest part about the lion video was the lady next to him in the restaurant who decides to show him.
Yeah.
iPhone.
It's so funny to do that, to be sitting next to somebody in a diner and be and say, "Oh my God, look at this guy get killed on my phone."
Yeah. What?
Especially like the 9-year-old girl sitting, you know, just a seat away. It was like just super, super out of pocket, but you know.
Yeah, and they all just kind of like quietly watch it too. They're all like, "Oh man, that's crazy." Instead of being like, "Whoa, whoa, hey, get that shit away from me. What are you doing?" Yeah,
yeah. Also, two kids get blown up.
We have to mention that. Yeah. That's the number one shocking moment for me of that fucking movie, is that they get shotgunned. Only the kids.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So senseless. So just like absolutely just all shock. I couldn't believe that myself.
I was laughing. And again, more evidence for a comedy. Gotta say.
You know, yeah. I think this is Messiah Knight being like, look what's happening to society. Children are dying. We are killing our own children. I think Messiah Knight was really onto something here.
Mm-hmm. He was warning us that we're in the background of America. We're shotgunning our children.
And that weird, like, lurking phallic-ish kind of barrel of the shotgun poking out of the window, just kind of like tease it, like, I'm going to get this, I'm going to get you. Like, before... Yeah. Blew that kid's brains out.
Oh yeah, not to mention the slow motion Marky Mark reaction to it, where he's like, "Whoa!" You know, it's like seeing everything. Yeah, exaggeration.
Jared, it's like we barely know Jared.
Yeah, yeah, we barely know this kid.
Not Jared. Also, what the guy could have very easily fired the shotgun anywhere, and they would have been freaked out.
Yeah, exactly.
Shoots a kid in the chest, knows that it's a kid. The kid is talking to them.
Yes. The kid is really becoming quite aggressive, though. We're just trying to feed.
Yeah, no, that is true.
And the little girl's like, I'm not even hungry. The little girl's like, I haven't even said I was hungry. My parents are dead. Like, I'm processing it.
Yeah, and I think the kid calls him like a pussy or a bitch. So it's like, it's a comment on paranoia for sure and hysteria, but also... It's a comment on, like, the youth of today.
Yeah, it's pretty angry kid, buddy. I don't know where they got those guys, but...
I mean, wouldn't you be angry? Look at the situation he's been thrust into.
I feel like in this kid's mind, he was like, I'm going to get this. He's being the man Marky Mark, Mark Wahlberg, should have been for Zoe. He's like, I'll show you.
Yes.
And I'll whisk you away, young girl, and I'll be your hero. You know what? Like, I feel like he was playing this whole, like, 12-year-old romance scene.
Yeah. Well, hey, I guess the lesson there is like big macho heroes get shotgunned in the face and the chest.
And also, okay, can we also just talk about real quick? I know I'm getting off topic again with plants. Okay, we never see Zoe and Mark kiss. We barely see them like hold hands. Who's chasing who?
Right.
We don't know. Oh, is that the moment where this will be falling in love? All of a sudden now she's pregnant and that little girl's calling her auntie? She's going to be a bad mom, a bad aunt, and a bad wife.
Yeah. Definitely the worst mom moment there is that, you know, 3 months after plants, you know, probably take out the majority of the Eastern Seaboard, she's sitting in her bathroom, you know, looking at a pregnancy test, and she has houseplants right behind her. Wouldn't you be a little skeptical of your plants if, you know, had they just, you know, killed every single person that you know?
I did not.
Yeah, and arguably it's still going on because then it's in France, so it's not like it's done. And the daughter has no protection. Like, you couldn't think to, I don't know, like, homeschool her or send her out with a gas mask just in case. I don't know.
Yeah, nobody's doing that. And then she puts a framed photo of her parents in her backpack. Like, okay, oh, you know what, honey? I did forget your parents. Here you go.
Yeah. Take them with you in this, like, glass enclosure. Yeah. What? That's a terrible move. I mean, there was also the lady, like, I know we're talking about the kids and it's like, oh, the youth of today are crazy with their cursing and whatever, but that no one was crazier than the old lady with the cookies, where she like puts out, could you imagine somebody putting out cookies in the middle of a table and then slapping your hand because you're reaching for a cookie?
Yeah.
That was wild.
Yeah, kind of. That entire character just didn't make any sense, really. It's like,
even when she was dead, even when she was whatever, quote unquote, infected, it didn't make any sense. She started like headbutting windows. like as a way of, I don't know, killing the people inside. You're supposed to only want to kill yourself, and that's not going to do it.
Yeah, really kind of strange.
And the weird doll that she slept with.
Oh my God.
It was like he was throwing out the tropes. He was like, how can I make this scary?
Yes.
Yeah.
Spooky doll.
I don't know. Okay. A scary doll. We have it on set. I mean, film it. Throw it in. I don't know. The movie's too short.
Do you have to say one last? Okay. One other quick thing going through my conspiracy theory to put on my Reddit page and also about the genius of this movie. Okay. So at the end, the last line is bicycle, right? He's like, my bicycle. I had to put my bicycle away.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Numerical significance, angel significance of bicycle. Bicycle symbolizes the moving circle of life. Are you telling me that M. Night is not a genius?
I mean, clearly he is.
That was on purpose.
He also got to keep making a bunch of movies. So if you make a movie like this and then you still get, you know, however much money to keep making movies, that's also probably smart. Whatever. He's a smart dude.
Yeah. Have you met him?
Yeah. Me and M. Night go bowling. We go midnight bowling.
Wow.
Yeah.
Go plant shop.
Yeah. I should have asked him all these questions. I don't even know why I didn't have him on the podcast. That was stupid now that I'm thinking about it. No, listen, we got to go. I could be asking you guys so much about this movie. I really have enjoyed talking to you about it. But before we go and tell people about where they can find you on socials and all that good stuff, do you want to, as a quiz, guess the ingredients of tiramisu? We mentioned it earlier. I have them in front of me.
Okay. Yes. Eggs.
Egg yolks is correct. Yes.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
I'm feeling good about nutmeg. Can we go nutmeg?
Nutmeg, I do not see here. There's different ways to make it, but I'm not seeing it here.
Cacao?
Yes. Cacao.
Okay. I bet there's some sort of milk particle or creamed or a condensed milk. Anything like this. Anything condensed.
I do not. There is a dairy involved, but I'm not seeing milk.
Is it like a cream or like a cheese component?
It is a cheese. Oh. Anyone want to guess the cheese?
Is it?
Ooh.
Is it like, what's that? Like mascarpone? Like the one that people.
Yeah, that's correct. Whoa. Oh, yes.
No.
Yes.
Wow.
Man.
Cinnamon? Is there cinnamon?
No, not that I'm seeing here.
Damn.
That's kind of the big ones you got. Oh, and there is one. Sorry, I'm seeing here another recipe with heavy cream. Oh. So you were right about that, Ever.
And there's like a coffee component, isn't there? We're omitting a coffee component.
That's correct. Yes, certain recipes also have a coffee in it.
Oh. So this is what Zoe and Joey were enjoying together while Mark was teaching the scientific method. Over and over to beautiful teens.
Hey, listen, this is a very romantic dish. So let's also not underestimate the sexuality of tiramisu.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's all awesome. Me.
Okay, so yeah, Ever, where can people? I mean, I doubt you're performing unless it's like online. So are you doing those? Stand up shows on
all
Zoom?
The time. Yes, it's a Zoom. It's an Instagram. You can see me. I'm always putting out some weird little videos on Instagram, you know, but it's Ever, like the word, and then Maynard, M-A-I-N-A-R-D, on all socials.
Fantastic. Nice. Well, thank you again for being on the show. And Evan, should people be, I don't know, planting more plants or donating to CRISPR, or what can they do?
Well, if you want to learn more about some of the stuff I talked about, you can go on my website, evangroover.com, or you can find me on Twitter. I usually do a lot of sciencey stuff on there. It's at Evan_Groover. And that's Groover, G-R-O-O-V-E-R. And yeah, and if you live in the greater Bay Area, I'm pretty active, giving talks and, you know, discussing agriculture with my community. So I'd love to talk to you sometime about it.
Awesome. Beautiful. Thank you guys so much for coming on the show. Everybody check out all their shit. And I'm going to be jealous at least the rest of the day, probably the weekend, because we're recording this on a Friday, of both of your names, Ever Maynard and Evan Groover. Really, really cool. Hopefully I'll talk to you for the next Messiah Night Shyamalan movie. What else could we do? The Lady in the Water, I guess, or The Village, maybe?
The Village.
Oh.
Putting my foot down on The Village. Evan, how do you feel about The Village?
I haven't seen the Village. Are there plants in it?
There's, yeah.
I'd love it.
There's got to be.
Yeah.
Okay. See you then. And thanks again.
Yeah. Thank you.
Bye.
Bad Science is hosted and produced by me, Ethan Edinburgh. Our associate producer is Emily Feld. Our engineer is Jeremy Schmidt. Bad Science is edited by Lucas Bollinger, and our social media is managed by Blue Whale Media. Shout out to EJ and Kate.
And our executive plant-ducer is Brett Gushner.
Oh, follow us on Instagram at BadSciencePod. If there's a movie you'd like us to discuss on the podcast, feel free to email at badscience@seeker.com. That's badscience@seeker.com. And please leave us an iTunes review. Give us 5 stars. I sound like an Uber driver, but it does help. It makes sure people know about the podcast, which we really appreciate. Thanks for listening. Bye.